This meeting is being recorded.
Yay. Hey, good afternoon, or good morning, depending on where you are. Today is, I'm going to go ahead and share the agenda with the Zoom chat on here for everybody. I want to thank everybody for coming out today. Today, our goal is to spend some time talking about claim. Oh, before we get started, we are an antitrust organization and we operate under all antitrust policies. And if you have any questions, please ask. Guys, today we're going to skip introductions. We can maybe do some a little bit later in there, but I think Eric is pressed for time, so I want him to be able to hear as much as possible. I'm going to try to get us to jump in. The basic plan for today is to begin today speaking about claim. I just kind of made up. We'll talk about claim as long as people have things to say about claim. We run out of things to say about claim today. And obviously, I'll take the feedback back and probably have to work stuff back in next week, but we'll talk about claim today. Driver for a short bit after that. And then I have some clarifications about vehicle. I started going through vehicle and have some questions about what stuff should we make reference data for, or how should we use maybe not quite as much as reference data. That's kind of what our goal is. Dale, how would you like to go? You want to share screen and talk about the spreadsheet?
I'll share my screen.
Thank you so much, Dale. Looking good.
Okay. So as I thought about claim, in fact, I've added two items already. So as I thought about claims, it really comes in two flavors. One is an identification of the claim and the aspects of the claim. And then the two is the activity. And so the activity is, unlike a policy where, you know, in theory, you could have a policy issued and nothing changes on that policy over the course of time. With a claim, there's always going to be activity, and that activity is going to be, you know, claim payments or changes to incurred losses and expense payments. So starting up on top with the claim identifier, just make my screen a little bit bigger. And the yellow highlighting is the stuff that I stole from Eric's file. Just to show that, you know, that it's tying back somewhere.
Right.
So from a claim perspective, claim identifier perspective, we would need policy, I would think, policy number, policy effective date. And reason I say that for we need policy effective date is we may use the same policy number for multiple policy years. So we need to make we need to be able to tie back to the policy term that is in play for this specific policy. Claim number or claim identifier. Then we need to tie back to the vehicle. So I thought we could bring back the vehicle identification number. We also need to tie back to the driver. So, and we didn't have it on the driver record, but maybe we might want to add the license number as that, yes, as that the driver identifier. And then, you know, the sort of the caveat for that is, you know, we are cautious about personally identifiable information being available out in the world. So, you know, there may be a very limited use of having driver's license out there. But in terms of whether we create an index so that we can specifically identify drivers or we tie it back to driver license number, that's something we can discuss as we move forward. We would need accident date. We would need cause of loss. So cause of loss, you know, could be an auto accident, could be vandalism, could be terrorism, could be a flood, could be a weather event, you know, something that is driving the incident. To the extent that it's part of a catastrophe, we would need a catastrophe identifier, and that might be the PCS code, CAT identifier. And then the two items that I added this morning was claim location zip code. So where did the incident actually occur, which may be different from where the policy, you know, likely will be different from where the policy is. And then some kind of a fatality indicator that, you know, did the, this incident result in somebody dying? So those would be the items that would be created for the purposes of identifying the claim. And I'll stop there.
I'll just throw in nice.
Thank you.
I like the driver identifier. And so again, that'll come down to if it's in the harmonized data store, you know, if it's not needed for the purpose of collecting statistical report data to report to me, then you simply wouldn't allow that to feed into the report. I mean, so it would be there and it would be usable by you. And then if there were other needs identified for it, that would get there. I really like the claim zip code in there. You know, the having the driver identifier hooked up to it to a LIC number would give us the ability, you know, one of my questions has been, you know, everybody talks about age and drivers and inexperienced drivers and things like that. That would give you a method to track through that and the ability with the right permissions going forward and the right needs to go beyond just the simple stat data and enable there to be research performed from claims data.
Correct.
Would it make sense to have a fault or not at fault? I may have missed that.
I thought about that, George, and one of the things that you would do, I mean, if it were collision coverage, that would tell you if it, you know, if there's collision and it's a collision claim under that coverage. So do we need the coverage that it's under in there maybe?
Well, so a claim can have multiple coverages.
Right.
So I see the coverage coming in under the claim detail.
Got it. Okay. Oh, got it. Never mind. We haven't gotten there. Okay, perfect.
Can I ask a question about the connection over to the policy? You have a policy number here. Are we assuming that we're going to correlate to that policies that are also in the stats data somewhere?
Yes.
So can't we get a bunch of the driver information from that policy instead of putting it onto the claim?
Well, that's why we only, so what I'm suggesting is on the policy record, we'd want driver's license number two, and that would be the means of connecting them.
Okay, I see. So you have the source. That's where you put that source. Okay, I didn't catch that before. Thanks, Dale.
Yeah, I didn't mention it, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Dale, the policy would have, like, if you've got four drivers, the policy would have all four drivers. But on the claim, I think you were suggesting that the claim would have the driver involved.
Right.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Right. So couldn't you also just say there's a... Oh, so the same thing. So you're assuming that the policy record had a driver license number that you're going to match as well.
Yes.
Okay.
But one of the things we have to... Go ahead, Eric.
Interestingly, so if it was an undocumented driver, let's say it was a permissive use situation, you would still get the driver identifier, the LIC number for them, but you would know that it's unmatched on the policy. So it would be just a dangling Chad, potentially, with it, but that would still be useful information from a, you know, statistical and rate making standpoint.
Of course you had to make it political.
The guy's name was Chad who got in the accident. Come on, George.
No, you were talking about dangling Chads. Come on.
He's just dangling off the policy.
The same could be true for the policy number that you might not have that accurate. Are we assuming all this data is accurate and it's going to match when it's there?
Praying, hoping.
And that it's preceding this claims information, right? That we already have that policy somewhere to match. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You can't have a claim if we don't have the policy.
Yeah, but you might not have reported it for some reason, right? That's all I'm worried about.
No, can't happen.
Yeah, I hope not. I just want to make sure I'm not missing.
Well, it'd be in our harmonized data store, whether we reported it to you or not, might be a different thing.
Okay.
And we do have to, we have to deal with, for driver's identifier is, as Eric said, is it a named driver within the policy, or is it a guest driver or undeclared driver?
Yeah. And then for those states that allow named driver exclusions, of which Virginia is not one, if the license number popped up and there was an exclusion on the policy, at least you guys would know it from a, court, a company standpoint, from a claims adjusting standpoint.
Right. So back to George's comment, fault versus no fault, not at fault.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I just had that email from him. Yeah. Yep. All right, I got 2 minutes before I have to be in front of a committee, so I'm going to go grab a coat and blur my background and get off to my committee meeting. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks, Eric. You want them to see your beautiful shop?
Yeah, well, it was suggested by my commissioner that perhaps I might want to relocate for this. So
yeah, exactly.
I hold you guys in high enough. Yeah, thanks. I hold you guys in high enough respect to not hide the who I really am from you. All right, thanks, guys. Good luck with it. Look forward to hearing. Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Is there anything else on claim identifier that anybody can think about?
Let's see.
Is there any other condition? You know, you have fault, not at fault. Is there anything else that, I don't know what you guys pass to, what's passed to Equifax or who's the company that does the, you purchase information from as far as, I can't remember the name of it.
Clue?
Blank. Clue, yeah.
I can't think of anything.
No, I can't either.
Well, we can get it put on the wiki, and then obviously we got to submit all this stuff and people got to think about it for a while. And so if we got this many people on and nothing else is jumping out, I think we should just keep moving and talk about this detail next. Is that
what's okay?
Sounds good.
So claim detail. There's what we do today and what I would like to think about and talk about in terms of a potential for the future. But in terms of claim detail, again, this would be, you know, one claim illustrated on the screen. What we would need is, again, claim number. Then we would need what coverage are we talking about for this activity. So the coverages would match back to what's available on the policy. So that would be, for example, liability, PD, or BI, PD, UM, UIM, comp, collision, other. The activity date.
So Dale, I just have a question about the connection back to the policy for coverage. Sometimes there's a one-to-many of certain types of coverages. Maybe it's clear how to figure out which coverage, like you're covering a particular vehicle, right? So if you match the vehicle, I guess you can find the coverage on that vehicle for this claim. But you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you may have to find exactly which coverage you're talking about. Is this enough information that you found, in your history, that this was enough information to find that correct coverage on the policy?
Yes. And then we may run into situations where we may be examining a claim for which we don't have coverage.
Right. Exactly.
To which payments would be zero.
So you'd say, okay, this is the vehicle and the coverage is property damage, but that vehicle doesn't have property damage, so no problem. Right.
But the issue is, on a specific claim, we may have multiple coverages on that claim.
Yep.
So, and we may have multiple claimants on that claim. So, So activity date is going to be, you know, if we're making a payment, when the payment occurs, if we're making a change to our incurs, it's the date that change is being made. And then it's, you know, the incurred loss, which is, you know, what we expect the total amount of the loss to be, the incurred loss adjustment expense, and then paid loss, paid LAE, and then a claimant identifier.
You had the actual claim, the event date up on the top part.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, the claim date would be part of the claim identifier, and then this is the activity that's specific to that claim.
Right.
And you know, taking us through this first illustration, you know, the claim happened on August 15th. August 15th. So this can't happen on 7/25. So this would have to be 8/25. It's just an illustration, but claim happened at 8/15. We've done. Yep.
What about denied claims? How is that captured?
I guess that would be up here in the claim identifier ultimately.
Yeah, so Dale, isn't it that we have the claim and then there will be a status of denied, rejected, negotiated, and then it converts to a loss if it's kind of the state of the object?
Well, the only thing I'll add to that, Dale, is that today, the way all of our systems are built, we only get information when there's financial activity. So if someone makes a claim that gets denied, that's not information that we ever get.
But I'm just looking futuristically. Wouldn't it be something you might want to capture, or a regulator might want to know? And it might not necessarily be the auto line. It could be a homeowner line or a coverage line, so that, you know, how many claims were denied and why.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure our claim department has those statistics. It's just not captured as part of statistical. So yeah.
I'm just looking at, you know, again, keep in mind, it's futuristic, and you know, having it out there, and you don't have to go to the claims folks and say, we need you to run a report for us. It's like, boom, you get it.
Do you deny the claim or the detail? Can you partially deny a claim just on like what particular coverage is?
You can deny it for coverage. You can deny it for liability. I mean, it could be first party or third party.
If you identify liability and property damage on the same claim and they don't have property damage, but they do have liability, is that what's done there? You just don't pay out the property damage and the claim is not denied. Is that the way it works?
It'd still be, you know, so say someone had a car, you know, the other thing you might want to capture is you suspended liability coverage on a vehicle. And then someone takes it out and there's an accident. And they didn't reinstate coverage before they took it out.
Typically, when you close a coverage, you've closed the reserve. Do you not also have a way to code what's going on as to why it's being closed?
Is that captured the history of the policy itself? Like, you know, based on the claim date, whether that coverage was in force at that time? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, I think we're talking about a couple of things. One is...
We are.
So,
I think, you know, you're talking about, all right, there's a claim reported and the claims adjuster denies it because there is no coverage for it. For that loss. All right. And then there's a situation that I was describing where someone suspends coverage on a vehicle, liability coverage, and then say, you know, someone takes that car out and the liability coverage wasn't reinstated, and then there's an accident. I think, you know, we don't have to get bogged down in this right now. I think we, you know, this is something that we come back and we discuss.
Okay. So rather than denied, I just said, is it a valid claim? But I agree. We can, we can chat about it. What's that?
I like valid claim more. The more we can do kind of, especially on, for stuff where we have like yes or no's. Well, would you do valid? So you would do yes or no instead of doing like claim status?
Or well, claim status has a different connotation.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, open, closed.
Yeah, I think we can. I think we can just put a placeholder on this, and we can come back and have more conversation about it because I think it's going to also be out in other lines and other coverages.
Yep.
Do you have a claim status on here? Do we need a claim status?
Yes, you do.
Would that be on this part of the record?
And then, you know, the other thing, subrogation. And again, I don't think we have to get into the weeds on these right now. I think these are just things that, you know, I'm just sort of thinking about different things and, you know, that we need to address.
This is the first time we've really done much of talking about claim at all. I think it's good to just kind of throw some stuff out there, and we can just take stuff off. So don't feel, especially because it's our first day on claim. Like we want to make sure our systems are thought through a little bit. So subjugation. Okay.
Right. So so again, back to our activity. So as we go across the four illustrations, it's sort of the life of this claim. So the claim happened on 8/15, on 8/25, you know, the adjuster had looked at it and has set up reserves of $1,000 for loss and $100 for expense. On 9/15, a payment was made, a loss payment was made for $250. Again, this is all just made up stuff. On 10/15, a payment was made on the loss of $700 and $100 of expense was paid. On 11/15, we added $147.11 to incurred loss amount, and we made a payment of $197.11 on the claim, and that's the last activity we have.
Yeah, are we uniquely identifying each one of these by the claim number, the claimant, and the date? Is that the three things that separate each one of these?
The client is separating them from what perspective?
So when you'd have a new claim activity, right? Are we looking at four claim activities here?
It's four activities for the same claim.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And if you had another claimant, you'd have a separate activity for that claimant. Is that true?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Right. So it's the claim number, claimant, and then the date is what separates. Okay. Thank you.
And you know, so a question that I have is, do we necessarily need claimant identifier? I mean, it might be helpful for our purposes for doing analysis, but in terms of statistical reporting, you know, are we ever going to report that there were, you know, five claimants on this claim?
So if there were multiple claimants, one had one was paid $250, another was paid $500, the second thing would be $750, and you wouldn't have a claimant.
Right.
Right.
And you know, the incurred loss would be the total incurred loss.
Yeah,
so I have claimant identifier out here. It just means that there's going to be a lot more records.
I feel like we can do more with claimant number on there. Right? We're going to have cases later that we really liked it to be there, right?
Yeah, I think it's like, again, as we look out futuristically, being able to tie the information back together. Whereas today, it's always hard to do that, right?
Well, it's So it's hard to do it statistically. It's not hard for us to do it internally.
Yeah. But again, it's, you know, if you have a query from a state, wouldn't it be quicker and more convenient to do it here than have to go, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I'd rather do it here.
Yeah.
But do you envision, you know, Georgie, do you envision the state asking us for number of claimants or getting us down to the detail of claimant?
I don't know. You just don't know how things evolve.
Okay.
And it's just like the, you know, and I asked my counterparts here, Sandra and Andy and Ryan, what they might think. I guess silence means, you know, let's leave it alone right now. Leave it there. And
mm-hmm. Well, from a carrier standpoint, Dale, do you guys have an issue with provide? What's your point of view on it?
They have to provide it. It's okay. There. Okay. So if it's requested, they can say, yes, we'll give it to you, or no, we won't. Or, okay. You know,
right.
It's it comes down to, you know, the information is available versus, you know, today we hear we don't have that.
Sure. Yeah, okay. So then with that in mind, I noticed that you have 001, and that's how this is written. Does that mean we're gonna need to come up with a reference table for 26 to explain what this means? Like, what would it mean if you had a different?
Well, so the claimant number is an ordinal number.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we may have 15 claimants on a policy. Or for a specific claim. So it's like, just our way of, identifying it. So we've set it up as a 3-byte.
Thanks. Okay.
And that doesn't necessarily relate back to anything on the policy. That could be
correct.
Right. Okay.
Sandra's asking what our question was about. Sandra, it was about having a claimant identifier available at the claimant level, right, Dale?
Yes.
And I would see no reason why we wouldn't want that. Is that what you were asking me, George? I'm sorry, I heard my name and I've got 10 things going on.
I hear you. Yeah, it just, you know, I think it could be information that could be useful. And again, I think it helps the business, the insurer, do what they need to do without having to go back into the, you know, the bowels of, you know, their legacy systems to pull the information. They can use it right here and do what they need to do. And then if a state comes in and asks for that, then it's available.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't really see a need not to have it in there. This is Ryan, by the way.
I can be convinced either way. Anything else? So subrogation is going to be an offset to the loss amount, loss and expense amount. So I suppose we need subrogation for loss.
Agree. And then for the expense, right?
Yep.
So for a particular detail, is there a set of fields that are mutually exclusive on it? Like, would you have subrogation with incurred loss or subrogation with paid loss? Or is there some sort of mutual exclusion of those fields coming on the same activity detail?
I'm not sure how. I have to go back to see how far we split out subrogation as it comes in. I think it just comes in as a net as a number, and then it's applied. What I'm looking to get to, though, is, you know, we can fully offset either the incurred loss or the LAE at some point, because then you'll end up with a net number, like a net paid.
Mm-hmm. And that's really over the course of all the activity that's
right. Right. So, you know, going in, it'll be zero, 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 zero. And then, you know, the next activity could be, okay, we're going to collect back, you know, $1,900 or,
right,
you know, $1,147.11 from our.
And that could happen years after the claim is closed. So,
right.
So is the subrogation still tied to the claimant number, claimant identifier?
Yes.
Okay.
But again, it, you know, this claim would show as closed, but it would be important information to know that there was a subrogation, a successful subrogation, and here's what it was. As Dale said, I don't know how that gets captured, you know, but...
Hey, George, what about if the subrogation is not tied to claimant identifier, if it's a, you know, manufactured defect or something?
Yeah, it's true, you know.
Or mechanical work on the vehicle that was, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. You know, just, again, I think there's more conversation we can have around this, like the other topics, that I think you have a placeholder and, you know, maybe it's against the, you know, manufacturer of the car, or whoever made the brakes. You know, what's the company?
Do we have to tie it to an identifier? Is that required?
I think you're finding that needs to be part of the requirement, but that can't be a required field. Like, we just have to handle it. Become get a subrogation with no claimant number, then that means it's across the whole, all the activity on the claim or something like that.
But it would be tied back to a specific claim.
Right.
And, you know, but, you know, you would want, you know, a company might want to go in and realize that, you know, they have X amount of other vehicles that they want to, you know, that have had a loss, and they want to go back against the, you know, Ford Motor Company, you know, or like the airbag thing.
You're right. Right. And you just tell them, I've had total loss of this because of this. And it's, and you inside, you from the subrogation, it's just one big clump of money, and you got to figure out how to pay who, right? Something like that.
More conversation, I think, on this. Yeah, but exactly. I think that we have it is important.
Right. So what I've done is I've added it both to the claim identifier piece, because to earlier points that it, you know, it may just come in on the claim, and we may have multiple claimants, and we're just going to apply it to the claim. And therefore net it, or if we can, or either or, it's at the claim detail level, activity at a claimant level. So I'm not sure we can have it in both places.
Yeah, I think this captures the idea. It seems okay. Like some details about how to really organize it in the data that we'll have to deal with, but I think it's clear.
As we contemplate that, my alternative was claim activity as a point in time aggregate amounts. So again, we would have, and this would be in lieu of having the claim activity detail as we have it today. Again, we'd have our claim number, we'd have the coverage, we'd have an evaluation date, and the evaluation date might be, you know, end of the month. And it would reflect, you know, all of the activity for the claim as of that evaluation period. So again, as of 8/31, we'd have $1,000 of incurred loss. $100 of incurred LAE, we'd have no paid loss, no paid LAE. So I want to show, let's see if I can make it a little bit smaller.
It's a roll up to that point in time.
Yes. So this is what you would have in, you know, for 8/31. Again, looking at the activity that's showing up on top, as of 9/30, you know, we would have 1,000 for our incurred, because that hasn't changed as of this point, but we would show that we had $250 of payment. Say the end of October, you know, we'd still have our $1,000 of incurred, incurred LAE, but now we have $950 of payment at $100 of paid LAE. And then as of 11/30, we have $1,147 of incurred, $100 of incurred LAE, $1,147 of paid loss, and $100 of paid LAE. And it'd be like at this point that the claim would have been closed.
Yeah, my gut reaction to this is that we can derive the second one from the first one.
Yep. Yes, we could.
Yeah, and we can't derive the first one from the second one.
Correct.
Did we talk at this level about the policy activity? Like I don't know what we called it over, you know, as we add coverages, remove coverages, we talked about that in the policy piece yet?
Yes, we did.
And what did we choose one or the other? I haven't been in all of these. I apologize if I missed it. Did we choose an activity style?
So in theory, a policy could have one one transaction that doesn't change for the policy term.
Right. But it could also have many, right?
I think for the sake of most of the people on the call, I don't recall as much talking about the policy stuff. I thought we started off talking more about vehicle. So if you wanted to recap some of your thoughts on policy, I think that might be a pretty, have huge consensus on that, have we?
But that, Peter, when we talk about vehicle, that is all part of the policy. The policy record includes, you know, is holistic, including the vehicles, the drivers, the coverages. At least in my mind, it's holistic.
So you're saying the policy is going to be the sum of all the parts of all these subparts that we've been going
in. Yep.
Yes.
It starts with the policy. This would be on a policy, and that VIN would be able to be, you know, tracked ultimately beyond that policy if it goes through somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing about this kind of level of discussion on the policy. You guys, you were talking about fields on the different objects, but not the history.
I think that was like 2 weeks ago when Eric first unveiled the whole structure.
Okay, I'll go. That's recorded. I can go back and take a look at it.
When Eric, I think it was like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago when Eric said, here's the policy level information that about the vehicles. All right, and the drivers and all that information.
Well, I remember the policy level information about the drivers and the policy level information about the vehicles, but I don't quite remember the part about at the top where we're talking about just kind of like the essence of the policy. But I definitely will go back and review that.
What do you mean the essence of the policy?
Well, just what we're talking about the vehicle and we're talking about the driver. Is there?
You're talking about the address, where the drive vehicle is kept, you know, all that policy level information.
The coverages, Peter, that's all on that list that you were going to turn the other way around, I think, from last Friday.
Okay, so that may all be covered in my Excel sheet that I've been working on as well.
Eric, you're shading green and you're doing all that different shading of the areas of the Excel sheet.
Okay, I have all that listed as vehicle, and I have all it listed as vehicle.
It was more than that. It was more than that.
Yeah.
Peter, we did break it down like you've talked, but you know, when we think about the policy, it's all of that stuff is the policy.
Sure. Okay.
And that's going to happen, you know, once, you know, at least once per policy term. Okay. Claim activity may not occur for that policy. And it becomes a subset of the policy, if you will.
But we do need to capture the history of the policy as it changes, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And so to do that, we have, you know, we've included coverage effective dates and coverage expiration dates.
Okay.
You know, both at a vehicle, you know, so we need that, you know, it's that's where we have the combination of vehicle coverage or vehicle driver.
Yeah, you had the effective dates in there, you know, all that information.
Because yes, you can add a driver. I mean, you can add a vehicle, take out a vehicle anytime during the policy. You can add a driver, take out a driver anytime during the policy.
You can change coverages.
Right, exactly. Right. You have to change coverage on a vehicle or a driver, that stuff. Yep. Okay.
So the driver of all of that is going to be the effective and expiration dates of coverage.
And but also the driver itself, right? If it changes, we actually have two versions of that same driver, right? The driver at a certain point in time still needs to be visible when a claim comes in relative to that time, right?
Right, but the driver's already on the policy?
Yeah, but what I mean is, like, if we have a driver and we change the date of birth because it was messed up, right? Or we change the amount of coverage. Let's say we change the limit to a new limit, right? That the old limit has to be captured and continue right. to be available, right? So yes. It's basically having two versions of the same coverage with the different limits on them over time.
With different dates.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'll be quiet. You guys did cover it. I wasn't aware that you got to that detail. Yes.
Well, I guess I inferred that we covered it. So, well, because, you know, with the dates, you know, all of the history of the policy is going to be there.
Yeah. Ken and I have been talking a lot over this last week, kind of about how we're going to be actually implementing some of the stuff. And so we've been thinking a lot about the policy in terms of how the policy is going throughout time. And so I was thinking maybe at one point this group would talk a bit about policy, just kind of at a higher level than I thought we had done, but I'm definitely gonna go check out what Eric's done on that.
Yeah, so as Dale said, you know, if you have this is the policy number 12345, it's got these coverages and it's got dates of those coverages. So right. If you change the limit, you now have another record, same policy number, different, you know, same coverage, different limits, different dates.
Right.
Every single change, every single, all activity is captured.
Yep. Thank you. That's what I was hoping.
Yeah. And like Dale said, we probably didn't talk specifically but you know, statistical reporting by its nature is transactional based. So every time there's a change, everything that happens is reported.
Yeah. And that's the base level we're doing on the claim here, but with the top section and what we want to do on the policy level so that we can derive all the other views of it.
Sure.
Right.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yep.
You can make it really confusing because then you can rewrite the policy to another state.
We wouldn't do that. We would have a new policy number.
Yeah. Cancel, reinstate.
I think it would be cancel and rewrite a new policy. Yeah. I could be wrong about that, but I don't know. If you move to a different state, I'm not sure if we retain that policy number or give you a new one.
And those are the ones that are worrisome because different companies might do that a little differently, right? Some might be able to do that and some might not.
At the same time, you're gonna have a policy with the Travelers. It's gonna have number 12345. You could also cancel and go to the Hartford, and then you have a policy the next year that's 5678 in some numbering system of the Hartford. So you're never gonna necessarily, you know, again, unless you're gonna, you know, with the address in, but then you're asking insurers to share name and address if you really wanted to capture all the coverage. You know, Susan Chudwick had over her life. And I don't know that that's what we're talking about here, right? So you can't always track all the history of a person because they can change companies every year.
Not yet, but I would assume data calls come through, like how many claims in this building kind of stuff, you know? So
sure, how many claims in the building, yeah.
right? Or for a particular person.
Right now not there's no data calls for an individual. No.
Yeah, and we don't get into personal identifiable information, nor do we get into specific location.
Fair enough.
Well, but the thing is, again, that's where when you send information off to Clue or you send information off to Carfax, it's, you know, the Clue information has to do with that individual. So when another company is getting a Clue report on a new insured, you know, the Travelers has shared information on George Bradner that showed I had 4 accidents with them. And I'm going to the, Allstate now, and then Allstate gets a Clue report that shows my accidents when I was with Travelers.
Yep.
And then the whole thing with Carfax, that's getting information. I don't know how much information is coming from the insurer, but a lot of the information I think is coming from the different shops that they take the car to that have different repairs done.
Off topic, George, I don't mean to get us up. We got to talk about that. I don't know if you guys are having trouble with it, but we are. We don't have anybody to call because I don't know where the information is coming from.
Yeah.
Another discussion.
And a whole nother discussion. But I don't want to digress.
So regarding claim and claim identifier and claim activity, have we got it covered? Is there anything that we think that we're missing?
I think once we, as Peter said, we can take, once we build this out, you guys might want to take it back to your claims folks to see if we missed anything. Travelers in Hartford.
Yep.
But I think it's a pretty good start.
Okay. Peter, I'll send this back to you.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. And we will.
And I'll get rid of this bottom section since people don't want it.
Okay. That sounds great. So we're going to move into something now that's going to be a little bit more controversial, I think. So we'll have some fun with this. So we've got Driver to talk about next and kind of trying to find the right balance between what we want to include and what we don't even want to think about ever including. I think it's going to start to come into play here. I've got some stuff on here. I'm happy to add more and take some stuff off. And Dale, if you want to stop sharing, I'll get right into it. Let's see, is this screen? You guys see my mouse?
Yep.
All right. All right, so, and we got to remember that obviously we're not going to be returning all the information, but we kind of just went through and said, okay, what's all the personal information that I could think of that may be used in some way. So I got first name, last name. So first, let's just talk about names. So do we want to have do we want to have somebody's names, or do we not want names in here at all?
It gets too close to being personally identifiable information, since it is.
Yeah.
So I would say no. We don't want to be ever reporting on an
individual. I agree. The answer is no.
Okay, so we'll get rid of the name.
But again, I just throw this out there for the company. It might not be information that they want to be sending, but it might be information that you may want to use within your company.
Yeah, this is the pre-extraction model, right?
Yeah, this is kind of, this is, we're talking about kind of raw data here, but it's hard for me to imagine.
No, you wouldn't, you know, statistical reporting wise, you would not be sending name information.
So we mentioned something that is missing from here, the dates. Should they be on this list?
Yeah, so we don't have a thing on here for policy directly yet, but the question is kind of when. So the policy is going to have these various dates we had, right? But is the driver going to have dates? So I got. I'll be back in just a second.
I think, as we mentioned, any change, anything that can change needs dates.
So I got a license year, which is going to cover what year you were licensed.
So. Again, like if you add information, change the value of this vehicle or anything like that, right? Whatever might be, this is driver. Sorry.
Yeah. So this is driver. So this is going to be, you know, does your license, the year you were licensed is not going to change unless you're going to. I guess maybe it could.
Absolutely, it can. Right.
Okay.
You renewed or you get a different license, you move to a different state, whatever. So,
is it the same thing if I get. So I was meaning this like original license year, which I guess clearly that's not a thing. But I was trying to figure out like how you'd be calculating years driving. But okay, so
I'm trying to echo what I heard from Susan and others, that we do have to capture change over time of all these things, and therefore there's dates on all these things.
Okay, so let's go for license date.
So the date is going to tie back to either the policy effective date or the coverage effective date.
Does it?
And we're going to have both, right?
And you're going to, right.
You're
so
going to have policy effective date and any coverage, any change date.
So the way to do this could be to have for every record, you have a start date and an end date.
Yep.
And that way it is easy to have that record in effect and also terminated when there is an increment to that.
Right. Because right. A driver may be a generic
pattern. It was on the original list. Policy effective date, policy expiration date, transaction effective date, transaction expiration date. Those are all on the policy listing that we did before.
I haven't looked back at the policy one in a couple of weeks. I'm sure it's on there, and I'll get that before we get to that discussion.
But then are we recreating the wheel if we've already discussed the other?
So,
I mean, if we go back to the other, right, you know, the Eric spreadsheet, and this, you know, and you've got some additional items that you potentially might want to add, right? And that's what you've got reflected here.
Here's what I have from Eric's one that we were moving around, because we were talking about these are the green ones from Eric's. We got the vehicles, the vehicle things, but then I came and wanted to get some of the stuff that we had listed as green is the coverages. I was thinking maybe the coverages will be broken off under their own section.
There's another tab for driver.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, that's your tab. Okay.
This is a spreadsheet where I was making it vertical because Eric had put everything kind of on a horizontal spreadsheet, and I had reworking it on here. Let me find Eric's original one.
I heard policy effective date and the audit expiration date and transaction effective date.
Or coverage. It's really coverage effective date and coverage expiration date.
Well,
so definitely, if we could just kind of work our, like for I think where I had the stuff that's already written down on here, we at least so for driver we don't want to do.
I'm gonna hold off on the dates until we talk some more. So okay. Let's come back to it because I'm pretty confused how this could possibly work the way we're talking about it. So
Peter. This is Ash here. Just wanted to make sure that you're capturing this. I'm getting the context of this particular entity, right? You're trying to capture information about the driver, right?
Correct. Yeah. So
shouldn't we be looking at something like the driver license number, the class of license, issue date, expiry date, restrictions, things like that?
Yeah, so I think you'll remember a couple of weeks ago we had talked and we had, James was doing some modeling and we were looking at maybe these entities right here. And so we were talking about vehicle. We were coming in and doing some talking about claims today. And then I was also looking at driver. So yes, Ash, definitely driver's license number should have been on here.
Yeah. So I have my driver's license open in front of me and I look at stuff that I would not consider to be PII, and that would be driver's license number or LIC number, as you were calling earlier. And that could be a key, issue date and expiry date, class. So that tells you what exactly is the license, I think, and restrictions.
Okay. Issue date. And then what'd you say, expiration date?
Expiration date.
Okay. And then you said restrictions?
Yeah, I have something called as restriction and it's got a code J on it. I don't really know what exactly that is, but.
It probably has to do with, wearing, you have to wear glasses.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like that.
Yeah.
Right. But we may not be capturing all of that information.
Yeah.
We will certainly capture license number.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to capture issue date, expiration date, or any restrictions.
Oh. You might want to capture expiration date, because if you find that someone hasn't renewed their license.
You're only going to have that once, that application. I mean, you're not going to have it
all the time.
The insurer doesn't get notified every time I renew my license.
Right.
You're probably going to want, age and date of birth.
Yeah, date of birth is on there.
Yeah, so I was thinking we were going to be breaking the DOB down into a month and a year, so that we're not having the birth date and the actual day on there for personal identifying information. But we could do it in a couple of different ways for certainly.
What does license year mean?
That was what Ken was coming up. I was asking about earlier, but I was thinking that was the year that the person got the license.
We may not capture that.
We don't have that. Yeah.
Sure.
You have it at new business, because a lot of times, I remember that information would be required from an underwriting perspective. So you could, you knew how many years someone was licensed. And in some states, they only let you use years licensed.
So do we think there's any kind of optional field that we would be interested in here for trying to capture something about age of licenses?
I would put it back on. We'll have to check to see if it's available.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Pennsylvania, for example, they only allow years licensed. You can't use a person's age. You can use the years they've been licensed.
Okay.
All right, so we'll try to put it on like that and see, because I think a lot of stuff can be optional, but the more we start to get places in the data store for this data to get held, it can get updated in different ways, and who knows. But okay, so then I didn't know the right terms for this, so I was looking at what we were doing though with the vehicle, and we had garage address listed. If we have a driver, do we want to know like what their, what would you call it, their home address? Their residence address, is there any kind of official name for the address for the drivers, like to be found?
So if we are staying away from getting in PII, do we actually take the entire address, or we just want to capture the zip code?
We're probably going to be closer to just these two, but either way, the words that come before it should be on there.
How is this intended to be used? Because at the policy level, you're going to have all that information. So what is the purpose of this screen? What do you?
So I was looking at the driver with respect to vehicle operation, and there being a rated driver that was rated to operate the vehicle.
But it's all tied back to the policy.
Yeah.
And the policy would have the address.
Okay. All right, so if that's there, that's,
you're gonna have, you remember we talked about, you're gonna have the address, you're gonna have the zip plus four,
We definitely talked about garage address. So I put garage address.
That's why I think you'd, I know where you're trying to go with this, but I think if we look at all of the fields, rather than looking at them by vehicle versus driver versus coverage, if we look at them all, then you can, and then work out the relationships from there, rather than, you know, trying one off, you know, just driver information.
I see where Peter is coming from. So that, like, in case of let's say a household with a remote student or a traveling job or not a traveling job or a service member, the driver address can be different from the garage address. So we might want to capture that information. So is that where you're coming from here, Peter?
That was definitely a consideration. The situation in which you had listed, I think maybe though that would fall under garage address. I guess I wasn't 100% sure between the relationship where the person would live versus and how all that works. Like I guess the situation I was thinking of was that my sister lives in Colorado, but she's on my dad's insurance in another state.
And she probably shouldn't be.
I don't know. Yeah, she may maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
It's with Travelers, right?
Yeah.
What's your last name again, Peter?
So maybe
that's not what the company really wants, Peter.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's totally fine. Okay. So there shouldn't be a situation like where you have people living in multiple residences on different.
So that situation can happen only in two cases, when there is a service member or a student that is away from home that is still on the policy, but does not have a car where he is.
But that'll get us back to the garaging location of the vehicle.
Okay.
And there will also be information, you know, at school over 100 miles. Got it. Where a company will allow that.
Got it.
All right. We definitely get rid of the address stuff here.
Yeah,
that's great. All right, so we got back down to maybe license here. We've got
Peter, can you change that expiration date to the license expiration date, if that's what it means? Because it's not the expiration date of this vehicle. Thank you. Or the driver.
Yeah.
Same with the issue date.
Issue date, yeah.
Sure.
If we're not, like I said, we're not capturing that.
Oh. And then some profession. What about stuff with employment status or profession? Do you guys capture stuff about that?
We don't capture it.
Okay.
I mean, some carriers do, because some carriers do use occupation.
Okay.
Yep.
So we can leave it on there for optional, not a problem. I guess one question that I had about drivers, so I have a Class M in North Carolina and operate a dirt bike or a motorcycle. Are there other, how many like, because like a CDL class wouldn't really apply to personal auto, right? Because that's or does that apply? Like if you're driving a personal automobile but you have a CDL license, what license are you getting in a car crash with? Like how do we track if a person has a CDL license? I guess is one question that I have.
I don't think, you know, unless it's a commercial policy where you have to have a CDL license, you know, personal lines, we wouldn't care. You know, we just care that you have a driver's license.
Okay.
And we don't even care if you have a, you know, I'm licensed also to drive a motorcycle, and it's just like an M on my license, like it is with you. But my insurance company doesn't care that I have, you know, a license where I can drive a motorcycle, because I'm only getting coverage from them for a private passenger auto. They don't provide motorcycle insurance, where, you know, if I went to Progressive, they'd want to make sure, all right, are you licensed to drive a motorcycle?
What about endorsements? Is that something that we should be capturing? Because the class is, the CDL is a different thing. I remember seeing it. I don't have it on my current license, but will restrictions capture that?
The class M might actually be a type of endorsement.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm pretty sure North Carolina, my motorcycle license is actually just like an endorsement on the normal license for it. Okay.
You can leave it as optional.
Yeah. Okay. So that one's not going to be available for sure. Original license here, maybe. License number.
On mine, it's a class D.
Okay.
With an endorsement M. And then restriction B, which is eyeglasses. I have to be wearing glasses.
So we got
license. I'm a class D, no endorsements, and a B. So I have to wear glasses too.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it may be on the driver's license, but it may not be something that we capture. And I'm certain we don't capture.
Okay. But again, other carriers may. So it is potentially available information, but definitely option, definitely, but we'll note that here. That's not good. Okay. Well, that's great. Okay, so that makes me feel really good about driver for now. I'll get some of those type stuff built out.
Okay, mobile number and email address, we won't have.
All right, and that'd be PII also, for sure.
Yeah.
And that would fall under this top one. And so that'd be easier to delete stuff.
It might be in the company's records somewhere so they can contact their insurer, but it would not be information you would pass.
Definitely. Correct.
Okay. All right. I need to go back and look at all the stuff we have written down for policy, and then same for coverage. But those are the only.
We should probably do a quick overview of what we, you know, what we've done the last 3 weeks.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would be really good. I think the policy stuff, we have a fair bit of information once I go back and look through the notes on here, especially when I look back through the notes. Do you guys have anything to say about, we could call the meeting short right now. This is where we've kind of come up on the end of material that I have prepared for today. We got through claim. Fast, it was great. There wasn't as much to say about driver as I'd expected. So I think there's really kind of, we need to look at, I just need to go through the notes and really fill out policy. But I think it's better use everybody's time for me to just kind of fill some of that stuff out, especially as we've gone over a lot of it already. In terms of coverages, do we think there's anything good to discuss about coverages right now, or should I get an Excel sheet pulled together before we start that discussion?
We did coverages. That was one of the things Eric had in his spreadsheet. On the right-hand side, he had liability, uninsured motorists, and that's where I told him, what about PIP? Because some states have PIP. And, you know, he said, oh, yeah, you know, I only designed this based on what Virginia requires.
Okay. All right, I'll go back and review both policy and coverage. Like I said, I wasn't really prepping for those today. I was prepping for really just doing a lot of other stuff this week, but for claims, and I've gone through this and did a bunch of various conversions and things. So, okay, great. Yeah, so
let's see. Peter, I think it doesn't have to be pretty, but I think if you could prepare one document with everything in it that you think we've discovered, and then you sent it out and gave us all, you know, a week or a few days to look over it, and then we can be prepared to say, okay, this is what's missing or not missing.
That's a great suggestion. I would go back to Eric's and sure. start with Eric's, because I, you know, one, it's nice to see the example, and then two, it's having it all in one place, one document, and then we can, again, tomorrow we can worry about, you know, how we structure it, but today let's just make sure we get the fields right and all included.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, we will get that done. All right. So I would say, it won't be super ideal, but just to be realistic, it'll probably be that my team will get something out Wednesday afternoon. So you'll have Thursday and Friday morning to circle some stuff, for sure. Maybe we'll get it out earlier on Wednesday, but definitely by end of day Wednesday, we'll get something out to this group. So I think those are good action items. I think we're out of about stuff that I prepared for. So does anybody else have any closing remarks or anything to say? Otherwise we can jump on the same time next week and we'll review the document.
Yeah. I will not be here next week.
I look forward to hope. If you see anything that jumps out as a big red flag and you have the chance to check over the email, if you email me back, I'll be sure to address whatever concerns you have there. And if
not, I'll talk with Susan.
Okay. Oh yeah. Duh. Yep. Okay.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Well, I'll give everybody 45 minutes back. So thank you so much.
All right. Thanks
everyone. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Peter. Good weekend.
Have a good one, guys.